A summer of simmering tensions has boiled over for the Phoenix Suns in week one of training camp. Not even a preseason game played yet. We're forgetting something, though. Kevin Durant is still in the hearts, the minds, and the eyes of so many in the Suns organization. On today's episode of Locked On Suns, I'll tell you why KD is the missing ingredient in all of these problems. Let's go.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past five seasons, and a writer at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. Thank you all for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Thursday. Quiet day, it feels like, relatively speaking, here in Sunsland. But nevertheless, you are here. I appreciate you. If you're just finding the show for the first time or you're revisiting but never bothered to subscribe, go ahead and do that right now. Hit follow, hit subscribe, whatever platform you're on, every single audio app out there, we have you covered. Do not miss a show in your feed. If you're finding us on YouTube, that's the best way to support the show. Go ahead and hit subscribe down below. Drop me a comment. I'm going to run a theory past you here on Kevin Durant. I want your thoughts. Am I just not getting over KD and I need to move on? Or is there something here? I want to hear your thoughts. And of course, you can follow along at Locked On PHX Suns as well. It's been about a month and a half, almost 2 months, since Kevin Durant made peace with the Nets, accepted his fate for the next few months, swallowed his pride. I don't know what descriptor you prefer, but early August, the sweepstakes end, the news cycle quiets down. Kevin Durant with his boardroom personal media company logo next to the Brooklyn Nets logo releases a statement. We're going to try to make this work. And to their credit, on Brooklyn Nets Media Day, they actually seemed ready for some of the trade crap to be addressed. And look, they had to be, but they did a good job of squelching it down. I don't know if that will work out. I've expressed my skepticism about that on this show before. But from a Sun standpoint, while all of that might mean that the Kevin Durant dreams are a little bit on the back burner right now, that doesn't mean that they disappeared, okay? Walk through this with me, all right? You're a Suns player. Come with me on this. So, number one, it's actually not going to be hard. And the reason I say that is because I think a lot of what the players and people in that organization are probably feeling is not too different from what fans may have felt throughout this summer. But coming off of Game 7, Durant was a logical big swing to take, right? You don't go get Kevin Durant if you had just won the championship, right? You don't get rid of your young core pieces, your first-round picks, etc., if you don't lose Game 7. But because you did, because the Mavs dismantled you on, you know, national TV in front of your home fans, etc., 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 it made total sense, right? It didn't even just make total sense. It felt like a consolation. It felt like, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a good way. It's like, dang, did we really screw that up? But look what just landed in our laps. The answer to all of our problems. The third playmaker to add to our, you know, star core. The power forward that we needed next to, like, everything about it made perfect sense. But after that, as it's all going on, all of the players on this roster, people in the organization outside of the roster, everybody knew it was going to shuffle the roster, right? I'm sure players had to make peace with that. Coaches had to try to get ready for that. And so then you don't get Kevin Durant. Early August comes around, but even prior to that, I think the writing was a little bit on the wall when so little progress seemed to be made regarding Durant and trade talks and all of it. So you don't get him. And again, that probably felt a lot to players, staff, etc., like it did to fans. Some combination of disappointment and confusion. Why didn't we get KD? And what a huge bummer that we did not get KD. That's what, you know, Landry Shamet or, I mean, whatever player. It's hard to know because you don't know who would have gone out in the trade versus who would have stayed here. But I'm sure everybody had to get ready for that possibility, make peace with it. And then when it doesn't happen, all those same people had to sort of try to wrap their minds around it the same way that you and I did, right? So fast forward to now, KD's still out there. We don't know how that will go. There's lingering tensions among Suns players, obviously, whether it's Jay Crowder, whether it's DeAndre Ayton, or just the obvious, there was going to be an adjustment period even if Crowder came back, even if Ayton was his usual, boisterous, laughing self, and there was no grumpy Ayton to be found. It still would have taken quite a bit coming back after that loss. You couple that with KD still being out there, it would be reasonable for anybody on this roster outside of Devin Booker and Chris Paul to be looking over their shoulder, wondering whether a trade might still happen. They will probably take an extra, pay some extra attention to the status of the Nets, right? The comings and goings of that franchise. And KD is both, with all of that said, he's the guy who felt like the fix to the problems that put you in the worst situation imaginable after Game 7. He was the beacon of hope. He was the light at the end of that awful tunnel. Then he became, right, what he is now, which is this carrot that's not only in front of the Suns. I don't want to make it as if he's still destined to come here. There's a million things that can happen between now and whenever KD changes teams. For all I know, he might retire a Net and this goes away, but he's still there as this possibility. And so he's a consolation prize that never was. And KD is also the quick fix that could be, right? The consolation prize that never was and the quick fix that could be. And if you don't think that's still on DeAndre Ayton's mind, Mikal Bridges' mind, Cam Johnson's mind, Jay Crowder's mind, I don't know what to tell you. You have probably never maybe rooted for a team in this situation in sports. You've never been in a situation where personnel changes affected your workplace. I don't know, but that feels very obvious to me. I'm going to go throughout training camp with all of the updates we're getting and break down my take on the little tidbits that come out. And I'm also going to try as much as I can to go through some of these role players because I think the rotation is pretty open-ended right now for the Suns and do a role player spotlight. Not just what the player is, but an idealized version of them, okay? Like, what would I do with them if I could draw up the best way to use them? What do I hope we see? So next up, I want to tell you why Dario Saric really can be the equivalent of a big free agency acquisition and what I think Monty Williams is talking about when he hints at a new role for Dario Saric. First, guys, today's show brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for football betting info all year long. Find the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth articles and analysis to inform your betting and, of course, to make bets as well. As always, BetOnline remains your continued source for sports wagering info with live betting and up-to-the-minute scores for every game out there. Of course, NBA futures, team wins, awards. I have the MVP odds up here courtesy of BetOnline. And this is somewhat just to rile you guys up. I don't think it's crazy per se when you look at who's in front of him, but Devin Booker is currently plus 2,800 for MVP. This is a player who got MVP votes last season, don't forget, finished fourth in the voting, okay? It was a three-man race, and he was the next guy up. He was the top of the rest of the pack. And you look at this list, and it's bonkers. You have Ja Morant ahead of him. You have LeBron James, Zion Williamson ahead of him. Those are pretty tasty odds. There's tons of NBA future stuff, as well as, of course, football galore. So head to betonline.net, betonline.net, or use their mobile app to learn more. Bet online, where the game starts. So media day and the first couple days of training camp, Monty Williams has not so subtly hinted at it. It's not even a hint. He has discussed openly a new role for Dario Saric. Saric is, of course, returning from that ACL tear in game one of the NBA Finals, but he did play for Croatia in Eurobasket. He was practicing actively by the end of last regular season into the playoffs. He did have that meniscus issue crop up at the end of the regular season, but I don't think that really was that big of an impediment to him when it was all said and done. So a quick review of what Dario brings. I mean, we know what he is, right? He's a connector. Monty has called him a connector forever, praised his spirit a lot as well. Just a guy who seems like he's an absolute blast to play with. Selfless, just wants to execute, just wants to win. And when he is grooving, he really just elevates everybody around him. You can see that because he's such an unorthodox player in terms of, it doesn't make sense that he's effective defensively as a center. It doesn't necessarily make sense when you watch him. He doesn't make flashy plays. He doesn't do anything spectacular, but he always ends up being in great lineups. He always ends up being on good teams for the most part. And I don't think this year will be any exception to that. But as a reminder, some of the statistical stuff that illustrates how special Dario has been, how valuable he has been for this team. In the 2020-2021 regular season, he was a team best plus 6.7 in terms of net rating differential. So the team's net rating, the Suns' net rating, when he was on the court versus off the court, he improved it by 6.7 points per 100 possessions. And it went up to plus 8.5 in the playoffs. So when he was out there, the team always tended to perform better. The main lineup that he was in was Saric plus the starters, which was a plus 7.4 per 100 possessions in the regular season compared to the Suns' overall mark. So whatever their normal net rating was as a group the whole entire season across every single minute played, when Dario plus the starters were out there, they were almost 8 points better per 100 possessions than normal. Paul plus a bench unit with Saric at the 5 in the playoffs was plus 8.5. So he's been part of these lineups, whether it's him anchoring a bench unit or whether it's him standing in for DeAndre Ayton with the starters and bringing a new element to the team with the normal starting unit, he's been great. The half-court offense gets better. Three-point frequency goes up. These are all things just by Saric being on the court that we know the Suns need to be better at and that they are better at when he's out there. Last but not least, his minutes also corresponded with the best defensive rebounding rate of any Suns player. So again, this is basically when he's on the court versus when he's on the bench, the biggest difference of the effect that he had on the rebounding rate. So when he was out there, the Suns defensive rebounded at a great, great clip. When he sat, it plummeted. That includes 8 minutes, right? So that's a big help too. The Suns have been really bad rebounding, even when Saric has been healthy, but especially since he's not been healthy most of last year, all of last year, they struggled to rebound the ball, okay? So there's a ton of things he does really well. Obviously limitations, like he's not a great athlete, he's not super tall, he's a non-traditional center, he's not going to be a rim protector in the traditional sense of the word of blocking shots and deterring layups and all that type of thing, but he's proven he can hold down the fort at center and at least be passable, if not elite, when he's out there, especially when he's against other backups. So what could a new role look like? We've seen him do a lot. He's played some four. He's mostly been a five in Phoenix. He's played with starters. He's played with the bench. He's been a floor spacer. He's been an initiator. So what could he possibly do that would be new? I look at it from a lineup standpoint. And Monty was asked about this today at training camp practice. And he said, you know, it's going to be a combination of both. He might do some new things, but he also is going to be, you know, used in new ways in terms of who he plays with. Where my mind goes to start is playing DeAndre Ayton and Dario Saric together. Hold on, you might be thinking, that's not going to work. Neither one of them is going to be able to defend fours. Okay, sure. Specifically against bench units is where I feel like it could really pay off, okay? Because they could play high-low. When Ayton has the ball at the elbow, which is, you know, the Suns offense doesn't really have like post-ups, like get to the block and score. Nobody's really ever done that under Monty Williams in Phoenix. Post-ups for the Suns are elbow touches or block extended touches where they can be used as a dual purpose initiation or scoring. And that's what Monty wants to do, right? So if Ayton's there on the elbow getting the ball, Saric can space the floor, whether that's the corner, the wing, the top of the key, probably the top of the key, knowing how the dribble handoff game and everything works for Monty. And then when Saric gets the ball at the elbow, Ayton can be in the dunker spot, and we know Dario's going to be capable of making that pass. We know Ayton's going to be able to finish that. And so, especially against bench units where you're not super worried about elite forwards who are going to punish Dario defensively and make him have to guard elite scorers, and where not having maybe the perfect level of spacing as an offense isn't going to damage you as much. So the ripple effect from that is, like, we know Biombo can play with the starter. So if he can come in and play, you know, the end of the first quarter with the starters, and then you can bring in Ayton back into the game in the second quarter next to Saric, and then maybe the same thing in the fourth quarter, you can find a couple moments per game where those two can play together, and it should help. It could help Ayton, I think, because he might get to be a little bit more involved in like the central action offensively. He, you know, wouldn't be having to do so much in terms of being the only rebounder on the floor. And it just would be another look. I think it's the type of experimentation that is going to be necessary this season. And then last but not least, again, with the rebounding, more minutes for guys like Saric and Biombo, Craig, Ish Wainwright, with Crowder and McGee both out now, I think that should help the rebounding a lot, especially if you're playing multiple at the same time. So again, rebounding, not the most important thing ever. The Suns have been very good without being great at rebounding the past 2 years, but it doesn't hurt. And if it's an extra little cherry on top of something that clearly could have some value, I think it's worth exploring. Today's role player spotlight will be Josh Okogie. I'll tell you why another NBA role that we've seen become more and more popular in recent years could be exactly what Josh Okogie needs here in Phoenix. First, I'm super excited to tell you guys about My Solar Nerd. If you live in a sunny state like ours, it's pretty likely you've had a few, not to mention many, many more than that, people stop by offering you, quote, free solar. The truth is it's not just free solar. These companies aren't local, and they're using misleading tactics who end up overcharging homeowners. But if you've considered solar, but something felt just a little bit off, My Solar Nerd is for you. Their mission is simple: help you get the best solar system to fit your needs. The guys at MySolarNerd.com are local, and they understand the nuances of going solar here in Arizona. They've been doing this for a while, and they understand that an educated customer is a happy customer, and they do what it takes to make you educated and happy. They believe that if you live in AZ, switching to solar should mean saving money. They'll put their industry knowledge to work for you by choosing the best equipment, and they'll also help you figure out all the tax credits and incentives that you're gonna qualify for on the back end, making sure that project is as smooth as possible for you, managing it every single step of the way. Our Locked On listeners will get a $50 free Amazon gift card when they book a no-commitment evaluation. Just an evaluation. This promotion, guys, for our listeners only and for only homeowners. So if that applies to you, visit MySolarNerd.com and select Locked On in the How'd You Hear About Us section. Make the switch to solar on your terms. Start your research process now by visiting mysolarnerd.com today and show Locked On some love by letting them know we sent you. Folks, going solar does not need to be complicated, and mysolarnerd.com makes it easy. Role player spotlight number one, Josh Okogie. I have to admit, I couldn't think about anything but Kevin Durant when this signing came down. All right, I'm gonna admit it. I was KD night, light, day, dusk, all of it. Kevin Durant. And so I missed Josh Okogie. I didn't give him enough of an evaluation. So quickly, let's go through the pluses and the minuses, and then I'll tell you my dream. The thing that I will think about when my pillow hits the bed in this room, just on the other side of the wall behind the camera tonight. Tell you my dream after. But let's review what he is, okay? So offensively, he has a prototypical role player diet of shots, right? He just attacks the rim and he shoots spot up threes. Fortunately, that turns out pretty good for him most of the time. He shoots around 60% at the rim, which it's not terrible. It's not great, but for a player who is mostly a guard and, you know, is a little bit smaller, understandably, I don't think it's terrible. His career free throw rate is really promising. It's 0.41, which is 0.41 free throw attempts for every one field goal attempt. So four free throws for every one, for every 10 field goals. Like, I don't know if that computes, but that's incredibly high. You compare him to similar players who are non-shooters but good defenders. Bruce Brown is at 0.25. Gary Payton II. Those names will come in handy in a moment. If you know where I'm going, you might already. Gary Payton II, 0.15 free throw rate. So you're talking about with Okogie, a guy who's almost double that, which is very good. He gets to the free throw line, gets easy shots. He shoots better than 75% at the free throw line. That is good. Defensively, he has the 11th highest defensive effective plus minus in the league. That's the dunks and threes stat that I cite a lot on the show. That seems to be the going industry standard, so to speak, among data people in the league. And it loved him. That metric loved him. Now, some of the other ones don't. The Basketball Index, which is another one that I use, their defensive stat has him 55th, which is decent, but obviously not anywhere near 11th. So, very good defender. Statistically, it depends on what you look at. And last but not least, I mean, he's only 24. There's this concept in the NBA that's been written about for a long time called the second draft. These guys who might be first-round picks, might have been promising for one reason or another, but never really stuck on. Maybe their skills didn't develop. Maybe the team just didn't have space for them. Maybe they just never had an opportunity to go out and play. And then the second draft is you can get players like that, like the Suns did here. Okogie is on a minimum deal. So the Suns got somebody who's only 24 years old, who has all of these promising characteristics for a minimum, where, you know, most of the time, if you're getting somebody on their second contract, they're making 8 plus, 10 plus, 12 plus million dollars, and they become very expensive. So this is a real opportunity here. Minuses are pretty obvious, and there are not very many of them. He's never shot higher than 28% from deep in his whole career. Four seasons, never cracked even 28%, let alone, or never cracked 29%, but let alone, you know, he's nowhere near league average even. I will say, though, college, he was at 38% on 175 total attempts. And like I said before, he's always been a pretty good free throw shooter. So I don't think it's, the book is closed on him ever being able to shoot. I think it's a decent investment for the Suns to say, hey, his point guards for his career have been D'Angelo Russell, Ricky Rubio, etc. Could he be a decent passable shooter if the guys feeding him are Devin Booker and Chris Paul? I think that's a worthy endeavor. I think that's a worthy thing to explore. So my dream. You can tell I'm pretty excited. But it's not just to me. I would not be super excited if all the Suns did with Okogie was put him on the bench and say, hey, if Booker gets hurt, if Bridges gets hurt, if Landry Shamet gets hurt, you're going to come out and, you know, play some point of attack defense, defend some point guards, and go stand in the corner, right? I think that'd be a waste. I think you're getting a guy in the building who's 24, who has this potential, and he has such a unique skill set. And so here's what I would do. I mentioned those two names a minute ago, Bruce Brown, Gary Payton II. Put Okogie in that role. And if you're not familiar, by that role, I mean what's basically like a guard-center hybrid, okay? Bruce Brown with the Nets, it's a team with KD, Kyrie, and a bunch of shooters. Joe Harris, Seth Curry, Patty Mills, these are the players who they put around him, and also not a lot of center depth with Nick Claxton hurt, DeAndre Jordan playing poorly, Andre Drummond being really just a backup. And then Gary Payton obviously was in a perfect scenario with the Warriors, who already have that identity of playing small ball, switching, all of it, and he just slid right in there. Let Okogie play like those two. Let him use his athleticism and his defensive versatility to make an impact, and tell him to focus on the little things. Play with intensity. Rebound better. He's never been a great rebounder in his career, but I don't see why he couldn't be if he committed to it. Make the right pass, and if he's around the basket more rather than just spotting up around the arc, right? Make the right pass. Learn the principles of what's going on. Learn your teammates, all of that. And then let the open threes come to him. If he takes a couple a game and he hits them decently, that's all it's going to take. Payton and Brown, both of those guys are sub 33% three-point shooters. They're a little better. They're a little bit better than Okogie, but like, look, if you're playing next to Steph Curry, if you're playing next to Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson, you're going to get open threes, similar to what Okogie will get playing next to Booker and Paul. And so they both did that. They improved as shooters. They at least made a passable number of those shots, and they got paid this summer. Now, Brown, a little bit less, which is kind of funny. It feels like the Payton thing is really just the Golden State sheen making him look a little prettier and shinier than he actually might be. I think they're pretty equal players. I like Brown a lot. He only made the taxpayer mid-level, but he's in a perfect situation with the Denver Nuggets. So, look, I guess in that situation, maybe you only get Okogie for 1 year, and that's a bummer. But it could be a real difference maker for this one season if you try it out. The Suns also have the personnel to do it. You can imagine a lineup of Šarić, Payne, Shamit, Okogie, and then maybe it's Torrey Craig and Ish Wainwright, or one of those two guys. Maybe it is DeAndre Ayton, like I said, alongside maybe Damian Lee. I don't know what it necessarily will be, but the combination of other switchable defenders and enough shooting where you can afford to have Okogie wandering in the paint, cutting, rolling to the basket, all of that stuff, you can make this work. And it's even better if they're able to get another wing shooter back in a Jay Crowder trade, although that's TBD. I don't have any guesses if that happens, but they could get even more equipped to play that style. And I just think these are the types of things, whether, again, it's Šarić and Ayton playing more together with some inside-out stuff and mixing the offensive looks up that way, if it's running pick and roll with Okogie as the roll man in some of these situations, switching more defensively, I think, is something you have to do. Okogie can help you do that. Like, he is 6'4 with a good wingspan. I believe he has close to a 7-foot wingspan. He's not, you know, Draymond in terms of size and length, but he probably can guard 1 through 4 in most games. You're not going to find, is he going to guard Anthony Davis at the 4? No. But like, aside from those types of players, he's going to be able to be competitive defensively against all of those. And switching is something the Suns desperately need to do. I would not be surprised if they use him in this type of way. They get creative. If Okogie is a player who can be more of a presence in the rotation and more of a difference maker than we're expecting. And again, he's 24. He's on a minimum. The upside is really, really high if things break the right way. And this was an awesome signing that I just frankly did not pay enough attention to. So there's spotlight number one. We'll keep that going throughout the week as long as the news doesn't get too crazy on us. That'll do it for today's show, guys. Aaron Edwards will be here on Friday tomorrow to wrap up the week, give his Crowder, his Ayton thoughts, all of it. Been very much looking forward to talking to him. We've had to reschedule a couple of times, so hit subscribe or follow. Do not miss that show. Monday will be a recap of the preseason game, number one, which is very exciting as well. So you don't want to miss anything, guys. Keep making Locked On Suns your first listen every single day, Monday through Friday. And in the meantime, make Locked On NBA your second listen to catch up on everything else going on around the league.